Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Thrill Ride by Julie Ann Walker, narrated by Abby Creighton. Dare and the world yields. Or if it beats you sometimes, dare it again, and you will succeed. William Makepeace Thackeray. Prologue. Black Knights, Inc., HQ. Goose Island, Chicago, Illinois.
They say he's gone rogue.
Like a bad smell, the sentence seemed to hang in the air. Those seated around the large conference table shifted uncomfortably, their expressions varying from wary disbelief to stubborn denial. Vanessa Cordero found herself falling into that last group. He wouldn't. Not Rock.
Who's they?
Ozzy asked. The guy's wild blonde hair and Star Trek t-shirt, it read, I beat the Kobayashi Maru, shouted of his secure position in the upper echelons of geekdom as loudly as the three micro-sized laptops open in front of him.
Official word came down to the DOD,
Boss said, pulling out a chair and wearily sinking into it. Frank, Boss Knight, their esteemed leader, was built like an Abrams tank. Of course, right now he looked more like Atlas, the weight of the world squarely on his big shoulders.
The DOD?
Ozzy snorted, and Vanessa watched his youthful face contort with skepticism.
Well, that makes it all clear as mud, now doesn't it?
The Department of Defense oversaw all facets of government intelligence and defense from the NSA down to the individual branches of the military. So, yeah, saying the information came from the DOD was ambiguous at best, and downright cryptic at worst. Boss's jaw hardened. He seemed to hesitate before finally opening the accordion-style folder tucked under his arm. Pulling out a stack of bundled papers, he tossed them into the middle of the table.
Pass them around,
he commanded. Vanessa was almost afraid to take one. Afraid of what the information might reveal and... No, he wouldn't do this. Not Rock. Not the man who'd laughingly and patiently endeavored to teach her to make the perfect roux for a pot of gumbo, despite the fact she totally botched and burned the first three attempts. Not the man who'd calmly showed her how to handle a motorcycle, even though she kept laying the sucker over on its side. Not the man who'd scooped her up in his arms and carried her 2 miles back to Black Knights, Inc. headquarters, the time she twisted an ankle while the group was out jogging. Not Rock. The whine of an electric screwdriver sounded below, and Boss pushed up from his chair to stomp over to the railing. BKI's command center occupied the second floor of an old 3-story menthol cigarette factory and overlooked the custom motorcycle shop, the cover for their covert government defense firm, on the first floor below. As Ozzy liked to joke, they were grease monkey motorcycle mechanics by day and Uncle Sam's last resort by night. And one of them had just been accused of going rogue. A shiver of trepidation raced up Vanessa's spine. A rogue operator was considered worse than a traitor. And what was the government's stance on traitors? That'd be death. Pure and simple.
Shitballs. What a nightmare.
Becky.
Boss yelled as the pages he'd thrown on the table were distributed around the group. His booming bass made her wince as usual.
Get your ass up here. We have a problem.
A problem? Is that what he called it when every agent and operator employed by the dear sweet U.S. of A. was going to be gunning for one of their own? When they would be required to gun for one of their own? If so, she hated to know what he considered a catastrophe. The electric screwdriver clicked off, and seconds later, the thump of Becky's work boots pounded up the metal treads. The hollow sound echoed throughout the building and inside Vanessa's tight chest. And, yep, the fact that the room was doing a slow tilt probably had something to do with the fact that she hadn't taken a breath since Boss dropped the bomb. Clamping her eyes shut, she forced herself to rake in much-needed oxygen. When she heard Becky arrive on the second floor landing, she cracked an eyelid only to discover the woman's blonde ponytail covered in metal shavings. They acted as sparkling accessories to the grease spots staining her shirt. Becky Reichert was the reason their cover worked so well, because while most of the guys were pretty handy with a wrench, she was the genius behind the kick-ass motorcycle designs that convinced the general public they were exactly what they were purported to be, simply one of the world's premier custom bike shops.
"Has anyone ever mentioned you bellow like a wounded bull?"
Becky demanded, hands on hips, lollipop stick protruding from her pursed lips as she glared at Boss. And yes, Vanessa would wholeheartedly agree with that assessment.
"Just you, honey."
Boss pulled the bright red sucker from her mouth, bending to give her a quick smacking kiss. When he straightened away, Becky accurately read his "I really need to hit something" expression, because the teasing light in her eyes instantly dimmed.
"What is it, Frank?"
she breathed. "What's happened?"
"General Fuller just called to inform me Rock has officially been listed as a rogue operator."
"What the hell?"
Becky exclaimed. Taking the sucker back from Boss, she bit down on the lollipop and chewed viciously, taking out her shock and disbelief on the innocent candy.
"It's true," Boss insisted, pulling out a chair for his fiancée, "and we need to get to the bottom of it." "I'm not sure we're going to like what we find once we get there,"
Max said in his slow Texas drawl, his bluebell-colored eyes narrowing, his brow furrowing as he flipped through the stapled papers in his hand.
"This evidence could be pretty damning."
The coffee in Vanessa's stomach, which never sat well anyway, since most of the knights preferred their java to have the general consistency of syrup burned like battery acid. If any of them knew anything about damning evidence, it was Brian Mac McMillan, former all-star FBI agent. Hesitantly, she looked away from Mac's worried gaze to peer down at the thin packet in her hand, her unease increasing as her eyes skimmed each postage-stamped sized photo and the brief blurb beside it.
"All of them?"
she croaked, glancing up at Boss in disbelief.
"He's supposed to have killed all of them?"
"Yep,"
Boss nodded.
"But most of these deaths look accidental. A heart attack, a car accident, a drowning. Why are they pinning these on Rock?"
"Something about a tip on a P.O. box in Rock's name that contained a bunch of files on these guys,"
Boss said.
"And there are untold ways of making a murder look accidental,"
Ozzy added.
"Here's something interesting,"
Mac observed, mouth thinned.
"Each of these men was kidnapped at one point and none held for ransom. They all just suddenly reappeared and went about their lives. The local law enforcement was never able to discover who'd held them."
"Yeah," Boss nodded.
"I found that extremely odd as well. And since it's the only clue we have to go on, I'm having Ozzy compare the dates of those kidnappings to see if any of them coincide with the times we knew Rock poofed out a BKI.
"But why would he do this?"
Vanessa realized what she said, shook her head, and rephrased. "I mean, why are they saying he did it? Killing these men? What could possibly be his motivation?"
"Money?"
Ozzy posited, frowning at his computer screens.
"Says here these men were all very wealthy. Having Rock 86 them might have proved extremely lucrative for some folks. You know, family members, rival business associates."
"No way."
Vanessa jerked her chin from side to side, more convinced than ever this was all a giant smelly load of bullcrap.
"Have you seen how he dresses? Do you think he'd go around wearing beat-up Levi's, holy T-shirts, and scuffed-up alligator boots if he was sitting on a big pile of cash?"
She pointed at the dossier with a finger she was disgusted to find was shaking. Hastily, she clenched her hand into a fist and hid it in her lap. Her number one rule since coming to work for BKI? Show no fear. The knights were all hardcore, hard-assed operators who didn't so much as flinch when they were staring death in the face. She didn't want it to find herself labeled the weak link.
"Now if you told me it was Christian," she continued doggedly, "I might believe you. No offense, Christian."
She made a face at the former SAS officer who, as usual, was sporting designer jeans and a cashmere sweater
that probably cost more than most people's monthly car payments.
None taken, my dear,
Christian said, his smooth British accent a minor balm to her screaming nerves.
As it happens, I tend to agree with you. If Rock had indeed accumulated the level of wealth likely to come from performing hits on these men, why was he still messing about with us? Why wasn't he sitting on a beach somewhere, soaking up the sun and ordering umbrella drinks from some bird in a bikini?
Vanessa glanced around the table at the faces of the people she'd come to love like family. Their expressions gave her little comfort. It was obvious they were as confused and scared as she was, which, oh dear sweet baby Jesus, had the coffee/acid in her stomach burning its way up the back of her throat. The Black Knights were not supposed to get scared.
Hardcore, hard-assed operators who didn't flinch while staring death in the face, remember?
She swallowed hastily and pushed ahead. The silence was deafening and damning. She couldn't stand it. Well, one thing we know, she grasped at the first straw to come to mind, is he wasn't working alone.
The phone calls.
Ozzy halted his typing.
He always got one of those strange phone calls right before he disappeared. Which means he had an accomplice in all this. Accomplice? Wait a minute,
Becky interjected, yanking a new sucker from her mouth. This one was purple, to point it at Ozzy.
You're making it sound like you think he's guilty. I'm not saying anything,
Ozzy held up his hands.
I'm just saying he was Mr. Mom on the subject of his second job. He did have the tendency to vanish at odd times, and he was working with someone, and...
His laptop dinged, and his face drained of blood. Vanessa's stomach dropped down to the floor in response. Ozzy turned his computer around. On the screen were two columns. The first one showed the dates of the kidnappings. The second one showed the dates Rock had disappeared off the face of the planet. The two columns matched perfectly.
Boss let loose with a string of curses that would do any sailor proud.
Okay, so there's obviously a link between these men and Rock's other job.
The job that they'd all thought revolved around some shadowy government entity. The job that, according to these recent revelations, obviously wasn't related to the government at all.
Holy shit, burgers!
Vanessa was going to pass out. The room was no longer tilting. It was spinning like a merry-go-round. She lowered her head to the table and tried to slow her breathing as happy little stars pranced on the backs of her eyelids. So much for that whole hard-hearted operator facade.
Is it possible? Could he have done it?
Just contemplating the thought made her temples pound in rhythm to her racing heart.
What?
She heard Becky ask, confusion evident in the woman's voice.
Why does everyone look like they've just seen a ghost?
Our government isn't allowed to assassinate its citizens.
Boss answered, his voice so rough it sounded like he'd scoured his vocal cords with steel wool.
And each of these guys, down to a man, was an American, born and bred.
A tense silence once more settled over the group, and Vanessa raised her 1,000-pound head from the table.
Really? We're really sitting here contemplating the fact that he's guilty? Rock Babineau, ex-Navy SEAL, founding member of BKI and Ragin' Cajun who's more patriotic than the whole lot of us put together?
Rock Babineau, the man who was witty and courageous and, surprisingly, given his testosterone-laced occupation and training, incredibly self-effacing and modest? Rock Babineau, the man who'd made her want to throw her rule about not dating operators right out the window? Her pleading gaze landed on Boss.
Please don't lead us down this path. Please tell me you know Rock wouldn't have done this.
Boss's Adam's apple bobbed, and for a moment she held her breath. Then she heaved a shaky sigh of relief when he adamantly shook his head.
Hell no. It's been my experience that when everything is as neat and tidy as this report is,
he flicked a scarred finger at the document in question,
then something is way the hell off. Nothing is ever this black and white.
She clung to the certainty she heard in his voice because, yes, for a second there she'd actually begun to have her doubts.
I agree, boss,
Ozzy said, closing the lids on his laptops so he could place his forearms on the conference table and lean forward.
And here's something else I don't get. If Rock's second job wasn't government-sanctioned, and no one in the government save for El Jefe and his JCs knows about the true status of our organization...
The Black Knights had been run autonomously by the president and his joint chiefs for over 4 years. In fact, their direct report was the head of the joint chiefs himself, General Pete Fuller.
Then how the hell can the DOD list him as a rogue operator? As far as they know, he's just an ex-Navy SEAL turned motorcycle mechanic. So what gives?
Boss whispered a quick profanity that questioned the legitimacy of the births of everyone working in the DOD, and, his I'm-gonna-kill-somebody expression all but screamed that what he had to tell them wasn't going to fall under the happy little banner of good news. Great, Vanessa thought. I knew I should have just gone back to bed this morning. When she'd stubbed her pinky toe on the way to the restroom, run out of conditioner in the shower, and nearly electrocuted herself when her blow-dryer decided to spontaneously combust, she'd had a feeling it was going to be one hellaciously craptastic day. She hadn't had a clue.
If you look at your dossiers, Boss began leafing through his own packet, you'll see the last man Rock supposedly killed was one Fred Billingsworth. Now, Fred was a super high-tech and super secret private investigator, which means he didn't spend his time trying to catch cheating spouses or insurance scammers, but instead was hired out exclusively to major corporations. As far as anyone can tell, his last job was working for some Democratic Party support group. He was supposed to dig up what dirt he could on all the potential candidates for the presidency next election season. As you can imagine, given the tenuous and sensitive nature of his investigations, when he died, the case was quickly taken over from local law enforcement by the FBI. Somehow, and I don't know how, they got a bead on Rock in that P.O. box, which, along with all these other guys, contained a file on Billingsworth. When General Fuller found out, he had to come clean to the powers that be in the intelligence community about the true nature of our business here, or risk having the investigation fall on all our heads.
That got everyone's attention. One of the main reasons the Black Knights had been so effective since they'd opened their doors was the fact that only those few elite men in the highest tier of government knew what they really were.
What does that mean for our operation?
Ozzy asked.
According to the general,
Boss replied with a heavy dose of skepticism,
it doesn't mean a damn thing. He says it'll be business as usual.
Those seated around the table made varying noises of disbelief.
Once done is done,
Boss muttered, shaking his head.
For now, all we can do is take Fuller at his word.
And what do we do about Rock?
Ozzy asked, and Vanessa swung her gaze back to Boss. She'd very much like to know the answer to that question herself.
We find him,
Boss declared, nostrils flaring.
Before anybody else does.
Chapter 1. The Edge of Monteverde Cloud Forest, Costa Rica. 6 months later. There it was again, that tingling between his shoulder blades, that tightening of his scalp. Call it instinct or intuition, or some sort of gut reaction brought on by a lifetime of looking over his shoulder. But Rock Babineau knew someone was watching him. Friend or foe?
Mad.
There was really only one option, wasn't there? Considering he didn't have any friends left. Slowly still sipping his refresco, the fruity drink he'd fallen in love with the first time he'd come to Costa Rica, he quartered the area around the little outdoor cantina while unobtrusively thumbing off the safety in one of his 9mm.
There you are.
Over in the corner, a man sat at a small table beneath an arched trellis. The thick vines growing over the top of the structure cast the guy in faint shadow, but Rock didn't need to see him clearly to know he was only pretending to read that book in his hand. In reality, the man was eyeing Rock from behind his mirrored sunglasses. They glinted in the evening sun when he leaned forward to take a bite of his ceviche, the citrusy fish dish so popular in these parts. Jet-black hair peeking from beneath a baseball cap and olive-toned skin told the story of the man's Hispanic heritage, just like his slight frame. Rock would bet his favorite pair of alligator boots,
that the dude weighed no more than 125 soaking wet, and a patchy beard told the story of his youth.
Mon Dieu, they're sending babies after me now.
A hard knot of resignation tightened in his belly, and his dinner, the one he'd been so looking forward to since it was the first food he'd eaten in almost a month that hadn't been picked out of a tree or spooned out of a can, turned to bile.
So much for a nice relaxing evening in town.
Throwing a wad of colorful money on the bar, he hoisted his heavy pack onto his shoulders, turned toward the dense green growth of the jungle pushing up to the side of the cantina, and made sure his pistols were within easy reach. Not that he'd actually use them, of course. Just because every agent and operator employed by Uncle Sam was green-lighted to put a bullet in his brain, that didn't mean he'd return the favor. After all, those folks were just following orders. And he knew all about that, didn't he? It was following orders that had gotten him into this mess. Ducking into the jungle, instantly soaked by the warm water clinging to the leaves on the trees, ferns, and vines as he brushed against them, he started up a winding, nearly indiscernible path in the way his father had taught him. Slow, steady, watching where he stepped and how he moved, so that he didn't disturb the forest animals around him. Cocking an ear to the sounds behind him, he listened to the symphony of buzzing insects, calling birds, and the wet drumbeat of water falling from leaf to leaf, waiting for that one note that didn't quite belong. But the seconds turned into minutes, and the minutes turned into an hour, and still nothing broke the harmony of the forest's song.
Was I wrong?
The man had been watching him, of that he was sure. But maybe the guy had just been curious why the tattooed gringo at the bar didn't look at all like the other tourists visiting Monteverde Cloud Forest. Rock's heavy-duty cargo pants, faded tank top and well-worn jungle boots certainly weren't the standard fare of Nike sneakers, jogging shorts, and beer slogan T-shirts. He'd spent the last 6 months living in the wild, and it showed.
So, maybe it was as simple as that.
Raking in a deep breath of relief, he smiled as a scarlet macaw launched itself from a low-hanging vine, flying up into the thick canopy. Its brilliant plumage glinted in a rare ray of sunlight that managed to cut through the treetops, its squawking call echoing down to the forest floor below. Adjusting his pack, Rock wiped a hand over his sweaty brow and stepped off the path. And that's when it happened. 100 yards behind him, a howler monkey screeched out a warning, and all sound in the jungle, save the murmur of steadily dripping water, came to a record-scratching halt.
Man has entered the forest.
And, okay, now was probably not the time to be channeling Bambi. Rock quickly shrugged out of his pack and leaned it against the wet, ivy-covered base of a massive tree. He covered it with the fronds of a nearby fern before silently moving toward the monkey's call. Paralleling the trail, he melded into the jungle's shadows, becoming nothing more than a shadow himself. As a forest slowly came back to life. The insects picked up their droning chorus first, followed by the warbling birds and the grunting chatter of the band of howlers high in the trees. He hadn't gone very far when a flash of movement caught his eye. Pressing himself against a tree trunk, breathing in the fresh, earthy smell of the lichen growing near his face, he waited. It didn't take long since the guy was sprinting up the trail.
In a hurry to kill old Rock, are you? Well, sorry to say, son, but today is not your lucky day.
He held steady until his would-be assassin whizzed by, then stepped from behind his cover. In a flash, he had an arm around the young man's neck and one of his sigs pressed into a soft kidney. Instinctively, the guy began to struggle, flailing around like a June bug on a string, but Rock just applied more pressure, which elicited a squeak. A very unmanly squeak.
Huh?
He didn't loosen his hold on that skinny neck as he tucked his 9mm into his waistband in order to yank off those ridiculous mirrored sunglasses. The baseball cap went next,
and he was astonished to watch a long black ponytail unravel in front of him. Rock spun his captive around and nearly shit his own heart.
Vanessa, what the hell are you doing here?
She'd found him. Finally, after months of searching, she'd found him. And the sound of his smooth voice, that sweet Cajun drawl that brought to mind tin roofs and front porch swings, stroked her eardrums like a silken glove. I've come to help you, she breathed excitedly, barely resisting the urge to throw her arms around his neck, to touch his dark hair. It was shorter than she'd ever seen it, like he'd been haphazardly cutting it himself, which she was sure he had. Keep it professional, Van. You have to keep this professional. Because, yes, it was true. She had a little thing for Rock. How could she not? He was just so natural, she guessed was the word. None of that bullshit alpha male mega ego that so many operators suffered from. Just an unshakable and abiding sense of duty. And a refreshing unpretentiousness that had attracted her to him from the very beginning. Plus, there was that smooth as silk voice. But he'd made it abundantly clear after she'd sent him all the right signals that he didn't have room in his life for a girlfriend, much less anything more permanent. Now, if all she wanted was to sweeten the sheets, he was her go-to guy. He'd made that readily apparent at a barbecue one night when he'd smoldered at her and told her trouble, and he'd definitely been trouble with a capital T, even before all of this. Could be fun. But she'd been there. Done that. And though she didn't have the t-shirt to prove it, what she did have was an empty ring finger with no prospects in sight. And let's be honest here, at 30, she was beginning to get a bit antsy about the whole thing, especially since starting a family of her own had always been one of her most cherished dreams. So, yes sir, since she was too old and too jaded to be screwing around, literally, with the hot bad boy, super hot, keeping things professional was her only alternative, right? Right. Of course, that was easier said than done, especially since his tank top exposed the tan contours of his tattooed biceps and accentuated the breadth of his wide shoulders. Oh, for heaven's sakes, pull yourself together, Cordero. And yes, the ridiculousness of her being here in the middle of the jungle, arguing with her own libido about the man standing before her when every government agency in America had guys out hunting for him, wasn't lost on her. Then again, he'd managed to bring out the ridiculousness in her since day one. For being a communications specialist, she always felt inexplicably tongue-tied around him. Of course, the last time they'd partnered on a mission, he'd done the tongue-tying himself. And there went her libido again. Memories of his tongue down her throat were not helping the professionalism, even if at the time it had been strictly business.
You came here alone?
His expression was flinty, his precisely shaped goatee drooping at the corners of his frowning mouth. To the cloud forest? Yes. She'd made the 4-hour motorcycle ride from the capital city to here all by her little old lonesome. Go, go, girl power. But the others are waiting in San Jose and—
Son of a bitch.
He turned and paced a few feet down the trail, cursing in both English and French. Then he swung around and stomped back to her, his hazel eyes glinting even in the deep shadows cast by the forest canopy.
How'd you guys find me?
It hadn't been easy, that was for sure. When his burn and delete notice came over the wires, he'd disappeared faster than a cry in the wind, and had proven to be nearly as elusive ever since.
We were beginning to think we wouldn't, she admitted, letting her eyes run over his face.
There were two vertical lines between his dark eyebrows that hadn't been there the last time she'd seen him, and he'd lost weight. He'd been lean and mean to begin with, but now he was nothing but muscle, bone, and sinew. When you combined all of that with the scruffy hair and faded clothes, a girl couldn't help but get a little niggle in her belly, because the man appeared as volatile and feral as the exotic animals inhabiting this jungle.
Still, keep it professional,
a little voice whispered in her head, to which she responded, "I'm trying, damn it." Boss said you cover your trail better than anyone he's ever seen.
Rock grunted, an irritated muscle ticking in his...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?